Resolution 24-420, moved by Counselor Chakutin, second by Counselor Zulak, be resolved that Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby reconvened into regular open session of council at
1:01.
1:01 p.m. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Is that carried? Resolution 24-421, moved by Counselor Ryland, second by Counselor Haskam. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby accept the reports, recommendations, and directions arising from the closed session held July the 8th, 2024. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Not carried?
No.
Seems to. Probably I just hold it here.
You could do that too if you like.
If it's working, I don't know.
Will it clip to your beard?
Yeah, it is. It is reading better.
Reading better over here. That's what I thought. We needed something out here.
Yeah.
In the spirit of reconciliation and cooperation, we wish to acknowledge that the land on which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and the Mississauga people. Its boundaries fall within the Robinson-Huron Treaty of 1850 and the Williams Treaty of 1923. We are grateful to live here, and we thank all the generations of people who have taken care of this land for thousands of years. To honor the suffering of Indigenous people and the love and wisdom they have carried for thousands of years, we pledge to work in community and harmony with each other and the environment we inhabit, and work towards truth and reconciliation. Back into open session, so I'll ask for a roll call once again.
Councillor Morley Haskam.
Councillor Nick Ryland.
Councillor Debbie Zulak.
Councillor Mike Deckinen.
Acting Clerk Administrator Carly Britton.
Mayor David Moore. Any declarations of pecuniary and a personal interest in the general nature thereof? Hearing none. We're moving down to 15.1, working meeting discussion on the Township Zoning Bylaw and Official Plan Update with John Jackson Planner, Inc. And I remind again the public, those in person and those on Zoom, that since it's a working meeting, we'll go back to the agenda itself, that we have question comment period number 26 at the end of the meeting, and not to interrupt while council is discussing with the planner, and certainly lots of time for questions afterwards. And this isn't, just to let you know as well, this is certainly not the final copy by any means. It'll be a public meeting and an open house later when the copies will be made available. Okay, John, I think what we'll do, I noticed you've gone through the official plan from comments before and made some updates on that. I'm just thinking maybe we'll just go right into the zoning today and then come back to official. And rather than go through all of the things you're suggesting, we'll look at the changes as we go and do it page by page, if that's acceptable to everyone. And just one clarification, too, and I don't know, that original document that you received, it had a number of color-coded comments, and one of the color-coded was Whitestone, and that was in brown. And I noticed, I don't know whether it was just you thought maybe that was council where we wanted to go, and I know you've done Whitestone recently, and that's what they were going with. But I guess what we want to clarify when we get into the zone standard, especially, whether or not council even wants to get into that area. Those are Whitestones, I think, that you put in there, and council may or may not want to go the way of Whitestone. So just for clarification.
No, that's fair. I think I understood that. Some of those provisions that came over from the Whitestone bylaw, I think, are probably good, positive things. Others may not be, but we can easily do whatever we can.
Yeah, so I think that's good. That's we'll go page by page. We'll get into that section, and then you can comment on your reasoning at the time. And,
sure. Yeah. So I think the goal is to get through it kind of as a first draft, yep, towards meeting our notice objective, which is to get in with the second tax billing of the year.
That's July
15th.
Yeah,
so, and changes can obviously take place after that, because some will likely take place because of submissions and other things. So I don't think it's a case where we have to believe that we're in sort of final territory here. I never did receive an update from the province in terms of how they wanted to manage the draft changes proposed for the official plan. I think they're still thinking about it, as near as I can tell, so I don't have any updates in that regard, but I think your suggestion is good. We just work through the draft bylaw and see where we end up.
Okay. Sounds good. I have certain pages marked out, and I'm sure the rest of council does as well. And just as we get to it, I notice some have different topics to come up, but as I say, I think we can just do it as we go along. The definitions themselves, I noticed you've added a few, and some of those were in white stones, and they're appropriate to hear, I would assume, or they wouldn't have been left in. So.
Yeah, I just thought if they had added value, why not put them in? It saves the degree of interpretation required. And the way that the law works, I think I explained in my notes, is if a word is not defined, you use the Webster's Dictionary ordinary meaning of that word to apply any legislation. So that's the legal principle.
Now, I can't recall, did you actually state that in here anywhere? Maybe we should, if we haven't. Because if somebody does come up with it's not defined in the definitions, then...
You know, we often do see it in the interpretation section.
Okay.
So I can add it there.
Right. I think it's probably a good idea.
So that would be adding it to... It's the very first... Yeah. Section 1.
I noticed in 2019, the one you had updated, there were, I think, three different definitions or clauses for cannabis. And I noticed those are all gone now. I wasn't privy to why that went in 2019, but...
It was uncharted territory, and now my feeling is, based on the locations, they're just treated as retail outlets. So... I don't know that we need to discriminate.
Okay.
So.
Again, as I just leaf through the pages of council, not saying we can't go back, but is there any particular definitions that you're concerned about?
I was downtown Hamilton recently, and in the old East End, every third store is a cannabis dispensary. It's bizarre.
Notice on page 17. You're making a distinction here, rental unit, and then later you talk about short-term rental. So it's good to differentiate.
I think so. I've written this particular bylaw on the basis that you would only allow short-term rentals where they were zoned for that purpose. That's going out a bit on a limb, but I think you've got to pick a lane, so to speak. It allows you to restrict them just to commercial zones, like tourist commercial zones, or to a future bylaw that allows them somehow through a licensing arrangement.
Right.
But as a matter of sort of determining that anything rented under 28 days is on the commercial side of the line, that's why they have to be qualified that way. So they're not permitted residentially. At this draft level.
Right.
I don't know if council has any preferences otherwise.
Well, no, we haven't talked about it. I was just wondering if you've been following in British Columbia what they're working on province-wide
for short-term rentals. And they're talking, depending on the population itself, one of them being a principal residence, one of the requirements in order to have a short-term rental. They haven't quite got it into legislation yet, but I'm just wondering what you see the pitfalls there.
It's interesting. There's some of that in Ontario. I know people that had to have the principal resident on the property to be able to rent. They just hired a high school kid to live in the garage. And I mean, there's a high propensity to try and beat the system everywhere you go. But I think our problem, again, relates more to behavioral issues. You know, people that are renting short term tend to be more likely to break things like noise bylaws and trespass and dog kinds of controls, fireworks. So those tend to be the issues. They're more of a behavioral nature that we can use other tools for as part of a licensing arrangement if you choose to. So it's going to be a work in progress. But for our purposes, I think our land use bylaw needs to align with the legislation. So the line in the sand is less than 28 days, you're commercial. That's the law.
And I know a couple of counselors had opinions about licensing. I know in Whitestone they have a licensing, but we understand from some of them up there that it's only capturing about a third. The rest are underground, they're not getting a license. But
and part of that goes back to the behavioral part of the problem. If you're a hands-on landlord and you're very much guiding your tenants, you'll never see them. They won't surface as an issue. But when you have three or four families roll in for a week with all the attendant problems there, neighbors are going to get upset about their enjoyment of their own properties, and they're going to end up here. So, again, I don't think there's a magic bullet for any of that.
I think that's what we're probably experiencing around here, too. We don't hear too many except for certain ones that seem to surface. And there's not as much control from the landlord as you say, the owner. And I guess that's what we have to look at. Do we really want to? I haven't heard anything either personally. You know, I don't know if anything's come into the office from campground owners. Because there's always that concern, I guess, if cottage rentals are taking over, then they're going to lose some business. They normally go there, but now they go to the private operator. But I haven't heard complaints from the campground operators either. So I guess what we're looking at is those that are existing now, and we know there are quite a few, and there are no complaints with those, as opposed to those where we are getting complaints, certain ones, whether it can be somehow drawn up without the licensing necessarily, because I'm not sure if council wants to go that way or not. Councilor Zulak shaking her head. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, the licensing, I believe Whitestone has changed it three or four times, their licensing. And it's almost like the gun licensing. You know, not everybody's going to register their guns. So you have all these people underground doing that. And not only that, the problem that bothers me with the short-term rentals and when it's not under commercial is people that have rentals under commercial, they have to do water testing. They have to, you know, the septics and everything. They have to meet all these requirements. They have to get a license to operate. And these other ones that are not doing it, you know, through a commercial way, they're doing it scot-free. And they put a lot of the other out of business, you know, because they have to meet all the requirements, and then people that are just doing the short-term rentals, they don't have to meet half these requirements. So,
John, before you start, do you mind just putting your mic up, like upward? Yeah.
That was a big issue in Whitestone from the commercial operators, because they also have some very significant building code requirements,
mm-hmm.
Other than a simple residence being used. Like, they have standards for floors, they have standards for fire, and all kinds of things that probably increase the costs substantially. But they're interested, actually, simply in managing them through a licensing arrangement. That satisfied them. So they just wanted to be sure where their competition was and how it would be managed. It wasn't a big sort of point that turned Whitestone into a licensing program. And it did work a few times. Like, there have been license applications turned down because they were found out, they said they had a license, and they had a track record of breaking noise bylaws, dog bylaws, fire bylaws, and so they said, sorry, your record, three strikes, you're out. And that's how it operated. But as the mayor says, that it drove a lot of them underground farther. So
they still could be renting, but the township doesn't know about it.
Correct. But if you've achieved the net effect, which is to minimize impact on your neighbor's private enjoyment, it was partially successful.
Yeah, it's partially, but then again, are you being fair right across the board? Because you'll have one person saying, well, I got away with it, nobody caught me, and somebody else saying that, well, I had to go through the licensing.
Yeah, you're going to be handing it over to enforcement for sure as an end result. That's all you can do.
Mm-hmm. To me, if you're getting money for it, it's commercial. If you're being paid to rent your cottage out, it's a different thing. Different if it's your family and you're letting your family go there for 2 weeks and you're not collecting anybody. But if you've got it on, you know, what do they call it?
Airbnb,
you know, and it's a rental, you know. Every other week you have different people in there, and a person that has, it's like when you say you buy your cottage or you're living here now, and next door you have somebody coming in there every week, someone different. If someone was to put in a garage, you know, a workshop or something next door to you, you're notified of it, right? Are you not notified that somebody's going to be changing it and they're going to have like a mechanical garage in there? So you have notice. You have prior notice of what's going on there. And with these, nobody has any prior notice other than the people showing up, you know?
You only receive notice if there is a change to the bylaws of the municipality.
Yeah.
So if it was a minor variance, there's notice given for
mm-hmm.
sure. So... you know, it really does come down to being concerned about whose head's on what pillow and what location. And as I said, the courts have ruled that under 28 days is commercial.
Mm-hmm.
So unless we've got a provision for them in a commercial category, they're not allowed.
McDougal is like that right now?
Oh, yeah. Certain councils take the whole short-term rental more serious than others. I went to Archipelago Council, and it's an 11-person council. They all declared a conflict because they all rented their cottage.
Yeah. I'm just wondering back to Councilman Zulak too. I don't know. They're different people, yes. But if the owner, the landlord, has control over who's actually going in there, can you differentiate between somebody living there, I think this is what John was saying, and the people there for the weekend or there for a week, doing the same sort of things as the family would be doing. And I think that's what I say, is if there's some with more control, as opposed to the Airbnb, you're talking about the advertising going commercially, you don't seem to have as much control. But if the owners exert that control, and you can't tell whether it's somebody renting or whether it's family members next door, is there really much difference?
Well, there is, I guess, what, like when John says, when you have the noise, the fireworks, people coming on your property, stuff like that, you know, if people...
Well, yes, but I'm saying if the owner was in charge and found out that was going on, they could put a stop to it.
And there's a septic limit as well. It limits the number of people based on flows, so that's part of the licensing operations to check that you have a system that's capable of accommodating mm-hmm. the numbers. In theory, it's not a bad approach, but like I said, I think there's about 20 licensed and about 60 on the internet, so
yeah.
you're getting about a third.
Councilor Cochran?
One interesting piece of feedback at the short-term rental meetings was that even those that were in support of licensing, when the monetary number was discussed, you know, if they pay $100 a year, they weren't opposed. But if they were expected to pay $1,000 a year for a license, then all of a sudden those who supported licensing dropped down to, you know, 50% of those who supported once the monetary value for that license started to increase.
So in Whitestone, it started at $200 per year, and then I think it went to $400. I think that's where it sits, I believe. So you're right, there's a tipping point. Rather go underground than comply.
And then, you know, I think one of the reasons for charging that monetary fee is to ensure that you have the enforcement to ensure that those who have licenses are abiding by the
Yes, and there's an administration involved. You got to take a few hours of staff time every spring or when they're being renewed. Yeah. So there is a fee to administer that program for sure.
And the compliance part as well throughout the year if there are sort of concerns?
Yeah, through enforcement, for sure.
So then I think you have to look at that aspect as well. The fee that you're charging, is it covering those costs? The license fee, is it covering all those costs at $100 a year? Or is it $1,000 a year?
I think if you're seriously going to rent your cottage, I even think $500 is peanuts for what most of them are getting, you know, like to make sure that the township is covered. So that if we decide to go that route, I don't see that amount of money being an issue to make sure the township is covered. And I just wonder, John, if, say, council considered it, if a person came forward on the lake and said, yeah, I'd like to come above board, and so they would apply for a rezoning to go commercial. So it would just the commercial section would be just strictly to cover short-term rental then. That's all they're going to be allowed. And it can be done for like a one-year period and revoked if council wants?
Yes, that would be done through a temporary rezoning, which you can allow for up to 3 years. I think there's an interesting reform that comes into play because no one can appeal council's decision to allow it. You can receive objections, but it would be council that would make the final decision and no one could challenge that.
Right, but yeah, that's really good though that we can. Is there actually a notice then at all though?
Yes.
There is to adjacent property owners?
Yes.
Okay, well that kind of covers because I think there's places on the lake that the neighbors are fine with it. You know, like that is going to happen where because they have large pieces of property and then there's properties on the lake that help bring business, you know, more people in weekly for certain businesses in the township. So there are benefits to it. And then in that case, if you were going to do that, well, then their septic is inspected, or you find the paperwork and say, okay, this is your maximum amount of people that you're allowed per week kind of thing. So that's basically what would happen then, eh?
Yes, yes, that's an approach that's been talked about, but it was a different world when neighbors could appeal, and that would become a very, very expensive proposition.
Yeah, so a lot wouldn't even probably go down that road where some might say, okay, well, I'll take my chances on whether the neighbors, if they send a letter to council, I may not bother, I may just get turned down, but it's maybe worth a try to them. And then I believe there would be some advantages of them being above board. Well, if they're law-abiding citizens to come forward and do that in the first place, they would probably abide by the attendance, you know, that is allowed at their cottage. So and also, yeah, not overload their septic system. So I'm willing to be open to the idea a little bit, but maybe if the rest of the council has already made up their mind, well, I'm just blowing a lot of hot air, but I see it as a possibility. And when we did have the committee set up, and Mike can probably confirm it, yeah, probably half of them on the committee probably were in favor of renting their cottages out or were renting cottages.
I think one thing we would need to do if council wanted that option would be to tweak a wording in the OP, because I think, if I'm not mistaken, our policy is no more commercial on the water.
Right.
That's what I thought.
So to do that, I would have to go back and tweak the draft OPA 9.
Right, which could be done. That would be the only exception to that, would be to
yes.
allow short-term rentals. Where I like the idea is, say, after 1 year, for the ones that come above board, if we're getting complaints of noise, you know, and all sorts of complaints, well, then after 1 year, it's like, no, you're not going to be renewed. So they either got to stop, or we're going to know if the renters can continue to pour in there that they are now operating underground.
So did you say, John, it was a limited for 3 years?
That's the longest you can zone a property on a temporary basis.
For 3 years.
But you can do it for another 3 years if you
yeah.
wish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we may look at just 1 year, because 1 year is going to tell a tale whether complaints would come in or not.
Now, do you know whether they, if that was done, would they have to meet all the requirements, like for the water testing and all of that stuff that a commercial property has to?
I don't believe so, because I don't think that for a residence, it's under a different occupation, so it would still be considered under that part of the building code.
Mm-hmm.
But we can check things like septic capacity and other facts that are on the roll for that property.
Okay.
And the number of bedrooms, for example?
Yes.
So whatever we chose to put in the criteria, we could request in an application.
Yeah, program. I mean, it's going to be measured individually on a property by property basis. I mean, it's the rezoning process has changed a lot, but I think the fees are all still like $2,500. So it's going to take a sobering application to come forward in any event. And that's something, if you did it yearly or bi-yearly, they got to cough that up every short period.
Yeah.
But I guess my thought to ask now is, do you want that possibility in this program we're undertaking?
Well, I just, as soon as you talk about the rezoning to commercial, what are their side effects? A lot of people don't want the property zoned commercial, even if it's a special provision for one use. Is there anything else that can happen as soon as you zone commercial?
No, we would just zone it specifically, as Morley says, for a short-term rental.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to look like, feel like a residence, more or less. I mean, I'm sure most of us have done Airbnbs. I mean, when I'm in somebody's house in Cape Coral or Fort Myers, I don't feel commercial. I just feel like I'm paying a lot of money. I should be there.
Well, we haven't experienced that, but
and then it opens up the opportunity for education too of the renters coming into the township. You know, that would maybe be a requirement. I don't know if you can tell the commercial operator, okay, this is the document you're going to give to your renters and make available, but with the disposal of your garbage, and the environmental committee can be involved and say, okay, here, don't be out there with your weight boats and killing our loons and stuff like that. So, and could you even, probably not possible, you could never enforce that your renters don't use certain recreational things like wave runners or boats. That's probably not possible to go into that controlling of the humans then.
Just one thing back to what David had said about the official plan with the commercial. So that would be specifically commercial. You're allowed commercial specifically for short-term rentals.
But nothing else.
But nothing else. But the, something to digest anyways. I don't want to think about that.
Yeah, the only problem is, yeah, for a decision like this, we're going to probably want public input.
Oh, definitely.
And our timelines are not going to allow us for to make a... Could this be something that we bring in after?
I think you could probably bring it in now and just not deploy it. Have it sitting there, but...
we're not taking applications then, basically, for...
Yeah, because don't forget, your new role is going to be, that's it, we're making this decision and no one could do anything about it. I have seen contracts on development where they give up things like wakeboard boats, wake enhancing boats, etc. You could do that. It gets a little more involved, but it's possible. So if we put it in, we can always pull it out if we get a big push back. But mm-hmm. I do believe that our policy is fairly rigid when it comes to considering anything that's new commercial on the water.
Sorry, John, can you hold that up again when you speak? Sorry.
How can you tell that? You can't hear
the chat people say who they can't hear.
Oh.
Yeah.
I just thought you were...
You can rotate it around, John.
I'm not picking on you.
Like this.
It just needs to be pointed upward. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So, but we recently had a new commercial on waterfront on Central Road, Middle River, an application that went through rezoning. So,
Middle River Drive?
No, on the OHAD application.
Oh, okay.
I don't know, that wouldn't be a recreational water body, I don't think, Mike.
That's the...
A criteria.
Okay, so...
It was a policy that grew out of OPA 7
mm-hmm.
that, you know, we in OPA 7 happened because anyone could rezone waterfront lands commercial and then have at it. And we decided that, you know, the commercial uses on our lakes were historically there, established for a certain reason, and they satisfied a market at the time and they're no longer needed for... And the future of the preservation of the character of the lakes. This is a different animal. This is a kind of a individual property owner's preference. And what I think is that it doesn't matter whose head's on the pillow if they're all acting like respectful property owners. That's where the rubber hits the road as far as upsetting neighbors.
Regarding the OHAD application and the way it's worded in the official plan 7.10.3, it refers to will be permitted, so it's referring to will not be permitted, but the last sentence will be permitted in the waterfront designation. So would that be WF 1, 2, 3, 4,
correct.
5? So it doesn't say recreational body. So the zoning would show that that piece of property would be one of those waterfront designations?
It probably was, yes. I don't think I was involved in that.
No.
Who did that? Was there someone that did that? There must have been a planner involved.
Yeah, wasn't there?
Yeah, previous council.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm not sure the applicant, I believe, had the environmental committee, right? Involved in that too? I can't remember the details.
I don't know. Wasn't there for that one.
I wasn't on council.
Okay, I think what we were getting at anyway is, you say going to the public, certainly, it would be nice to have something, and John's sort of indicating that he can put something together, to put it out there as a possibility for them to comment on, rather than saying, put it in later.
Yeah.
I think they have to see the document and then make their comments, however you word it. If
so
council goes that way.
Yeah, so it wouldn't be allowed as a matter of right.
No.
But it would be possible through an application.
Yeah.
And neighbors do receive copies of it. So I think that's all fair enough if the neighbors correspond with council saying, no, I do not want there. That, well, I can't speak for all council, but it would probably start becoming negative on allowing it. You know, it's, you know. So I don't know. Yeah, I think it's worth going forward and giving, getting public comments at some stage of the game.
Okay.
Just I know talking to a lot of people, like they're whether because they're making money off it, but a lot of people don't seem to have a problem with the cottage rentals. Maybe because they become friends with a lot of people that are renting, which I know in Broadbent through the years, any renters coming in to that were renting any places down there ended up buying their own cottage eventually. You know, they've become part of the community, so it's just part of how the world turns.
Well, and I think people that are responsible that are renting don't pose any issue for anybody.
That's right.
I have a neighbor that rents their place regularly for as much as $10,000 a week, and yet I see a car coming now and then, never see hide nor hair of them outside. They don't make any noise, don't have fireworks, don't have any dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And they put it down, too. I've had this discussion with them, is that they have a renter's handbook that the renter acknowledges seeing it stays in the house and everything else, with all those details like you mentioned earlier about garbage and this and that and how you do all these things, right? So, and they get them to agree. They rent multiple properties. I don't know of any other one in McKellar, but I knew that they have multiple properties they rent. And that's what he puts down to it. This is why, right? And he says, I go through a vetting process, and if they don't make it, they don't rent. So.
Okay. I'm sure we'll circle back to this.
Sure.
Yeah, if you can do that, page 24, if you have any other issues before 24, let me know.
I think I had 24 written down.
Well,
yes, I
thought you might, a shipping container. I know you'd mentioned it before. So.
Well, after listening to the public input last meeting, I decided that they should be allowed everywhere.
No.
Well, I think right now, let's get to page 24. So presently, they would be allowed in waterfront and rural residential, only one 20-foot with larger setbacks from property lines. That to me all seems fair enough. And then there's no restrictions in the rural.
Or commercial or industrial.
Right.
Yes.
So you're allowed more than one?
Yeah.
In the rural area, yes. They're essentially just large storage buildings
right.
That are very, inexpensive nature with lots of good things about them. They don't burn.
Right.
And now, there is the setbacks again in the rural for somebody putting them on, John, setbacks from property lines. I guess I think I've seen that in here somewhere.
There are increased setbacks for rural to begin with in the rural zone.
Right.
Those would be in the table under the rural zone standards.
What is the page for that?
That is,
I think I had it here somewhere.
It's page 45. Yes, and standard is for 5 meters.
Okay.
In the rural zone, 16.5 feet.
Just the bottom of 24, it's just a technical thing. We got two no's in there. No bed and breakfast shall contain no more than, just any more or something, or more than. I don't know if we need.
Doesn't even need the second no?
No, okay. And I think on 25, you explaining of the non-complying lots, and you're sort of legal non-conforming and non-complying. Is there something about buildings? Can you just expand on that a bit?
Well, the Planning Act of Ontario cannot be retroactive, and so there's a section called legal non-conforming under section 34.9. Over the years, the bylaws that have been written have tended to distinguish between legal non-conforming uses, emphasis on use, and non-complying buildings. But more recently, the courts have ruled that that language isn't in Section 34.9, so your legal non-conforming applies to uses and standards. So that narrative is no longer recognized in the bylaws of today. The courts simply say, well, you're legal non-conforming, you're protected under Section 34.9, because planning rules can't be retroactive. So I'm just taking it out.
That was the bottom 25, which is part of it. I mean, it goes more than, further than that, but that's just one of non-compliant lines. And non-compliant buildings up on the other side.
So if your cottage is 5 feet from the water and you want to rebuild it, you can be recognized at 5 feet from the water. That's your legal frontage.
Again, if you want anything before then, let me know. This is 314 A, just a technical thing again. Up to the last line at A, approved by the local approval authority.
Yes.
That's all. I think it was in the previous one.
Can I just ask about item C on there, in 3.14 on page 27, we say that the dwelling unit has separate washroom and kitchen facilities for those of the non-residential use. Does that imply that they have a separate septic or that they're connected to the main septic?
It wouldn't matter, just as long as they're...
Met the capacity.
Yes, met the requirements of the building code.
Okay.
The larger homes these days tend to have two systems.
Okay.
On the, I'm just going back to some of the concerns from before too, on page 35 at the top. Just wondering whether it was covered or not, because the concern was a water access lot. Would that be a requirement? Or how would you meet that requirement?
For parking?
Yes. That was a concern, one of the, I don't know, it was an appeal or comment.
I thought there was a section a little later on for water access. Yeah, it's number on page 36 under Roman numeral 4.
So that's where it has to be owned or registered on title to the water access landowner.
Right. It comes up from time to time.
Oh, yeah. I was just trying to think of that one we just ran into recently down off Tate's Island. People who were out on the island, and they had a parking area on the shore, and I don't think it was it registered in the same name?
No.
No, that one had no, there was no arrangement. It was just, I think, almost just historically existed.
Yeah.
Okay, no, I'll take that.
I would touch something on page 34. a number of dwelling units on one lot. Halfway down under three, secondary dwelling units B, where it says confirmation that the septic system has capacity to accommodate the secondary dwelling unit. Should water supply also be there?
You could. I mean, I think not being able to get water is kind of an important point, but I think that makes sense, Mara.
Like whether allow sharing the two dwellings, like out of one well, or should the, because are these also being, is this where they have to be certain distance apart to possibly allow future consent? Is that part of this here?
No.
Or no?
No.
It's not. Oh, well, then that
I mean,
changes that a little bit then.
Yeah, would you live somewhere that didn't have water?
No, that's not possible.
Not easy.
Yeah, well, I was just wondering whether.
But I'll stick it in there. Water supply and septic system.
So who confirms that? Because now North B. Mattawa confirms the septic system. So who confirms the water supply? Do you have to do a water, groundwater study to determine for confirmation, or?
No, I think, not trying to be smart, but I think you just run water. You can get 3 gallons per minute of water flow. That would handle probably most domestic demands for two dwellings.
I'm just looking at it though, that who's going to ensure that compliance? Because the other sections are, there's someone overseeing the compliance, like wastewater.
Yeah, there's a true sort of process to that. That's why I said that the best way to confirm that is to run the water. I mean, for example, if you're doing development, there's not really any concern over commercial, because if a commercial operation didn't have water, it doesn't have customers. But if you're building residence for a residence sake, you better make sure you've got water, because you won't have residence there. You can't live without water.
Well, yeah, so, yeah, anyways. So
would that be part of the building permit?
There has to be a domestic water supply, yes. Yeah. So it's kind of left to the inspector, but it's important, but there isn't have the same checks and balances that the building code has on wastewater.
I'm sort of backtracking a little bit, or having second thoughts about putting that water supply in there, because a lot of times it could be you're trying to house your grandparents or a child that can't afford to stay somewhere else, and then so you build them a second dwelling, and it's like, okay, and you got to pay $25,000 to drill a well.
Could you not take it from the lake?
What if you're not on the lake, though?
This
is for a rural.
So I'm
backpedaling, I think, on that.
I don't think it needs to be in this document. The person will figure it out as they're going, that is a necessity, and they're going to do whatever they need to.
Yeah, I think, because, and then they could share the one drilled well. You know, like, if that's what your budget allows, you know, some people are in that situation.
So back to page 28, there's one thing there, 3.16 fences. You see that this is a new addition?
Yeah, and I don't think it's a bad thing to have fences in the bylaw, only because I didn't think they were land use, but a lawyer, Doug Christie, said that his interpretation was they were controllable in the bylaw. So I don't know that it's a bad thing to limit fences in the lakefront areas.
I don't think we've had a lot of issues or concerns, or we're dealing with any issues to make it that we need to actually have in there. Just because I'm thinking about the people that who are on waterfront and they do have water fencing within their front yard, that would be the water side. In order to fence their pets, like their dog or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I would hate for what they're trying to do to to ensure that their pets stay on their property is now not allowable within that that area.
Do they fence it along the shore as well?
Just whatever they have as, you know, their, what I've seen anyways is, say, between the their dwelling and the waterfront, then they have an area that's fenced so that their dog doesn't go running anywhere beyond their property lines.
Yeah, because some people in waterfront can be set back 500 feet from the shoreline, so, and they want to utilize, you know, property in their front yard and their waterfront of way beyond. So it does sound kind of restrictive for a lot of lots going forward that, yeah, they couldn't
so
put in.
So it's not so much
fence
for the aesthetics as it is for the people to be able to have things like pet fences.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, if there's no problem, we could. This was kind of an important restriction for whatever reason in Seguin. They don't allow fencing within the first 20 meters of the water, just to keep the aesthetics of their shoreline. But if it doesn't work here, I can take it in.
Yeah, there's always that. You're talking about being a long way back.
Yeah.
Fine, and those that are close, and I guess there's always the fear that they're going to be obstructionist to a neighbor if they get up too high, and then they'll lose their sight of the whatever they had before. So that's probably why it's in there in a lot of cases. But yeah.
Unless we've had a lot of complaints, I've never heard anyone complaining about that, and I've seen that it's been very beneficial for those people that do have pets to be able to ensure that their pets stay within their property.
But it would be fenced along the water's edge too, or somewhere, close it in, I would think.
Yes,
my dogs
would be
crazy.
Yes, no, that's right. So there would be not at the, like, yes, back from the water's edge for that exact reason.
We're actually trying to tear down the fences in McKellar.
Oh.
Too, so.
Philosophically, or?
Okay, I got a bottom of 37. It's just, again, a technical. It references M3, and I think the M3 is the landfill. Rather than the industrial pit or quarry, I would cross reference and see. But
no, I think you're right.
And on 38, I know this came up as a concern, referencing the license bylaw for trailers. And we never did have a number of that particular bylaw. I'm sure we could find it. Just to make a reference for people.
Yeah,
that, that was put in years ago. So
I was going to say it's been in place for a long, long time.
Yeah. There's also the concern on 38, and I know you can't keep up with these, but prohibited uses on E. Someone had said that the title had changed from Agri Resorts. Is that? It's a new title. Now they'd mentioned that this was couple years ago, now I don't know if the same title or not, Mining Modernization Act.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't confirm, but I'm just saying that's the trouble. And I notice you're doing that regularly too, rather than giving a bylaw a particular number. You say this bylaw, and rather than referring to a ministry that may change its name, MNRF now is MNR again, because forestry's gone from the title. So it's hard to put it, something in a document.
I think forestry's back.
Oh, it's in there, but I don't think it's in the title. Unless he's put it in again recently.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Because at one time they had mines, Northern Development of Mines, in there as well.
Yeah.
So my goal was to kind of say just whatever provincial legislation.
Right, yeah.
Trailer bylaw, John, is 9417 as amended.
Find that so fast.
Magic of computers.
Okay.
Just don't ask for all the amendments.
Yeah.
Give Mike a second, he's gonna find it.
Okay. 40, just a technical again. 361 swimming pools, two number twos.
So the addition in red, is that new legislation that you're adding just because the legislation is being updated, or because the the first three paragraphs are the same as in the previous bylaw, but that which is added in red, is that due to new legislation, or?
I'd have to check where I got that one, because it is new. It's a new edition. I'm wondering if I stole that from Whitestone.
That's what I'm wondering. I'm just trying to check Whitestone.
Would that have come from MMAH, which is possible, through the MNR, one window?
I could operate with two hands here just a second.
But I'm just concerned that it's adding more restrictions on allowable wayside pits, which are allowed as defined.
Looks like Whitestone.
Okay. So it may be something we don't need.
Stabilization ponds. Is that something else that should go in there? OP 5117.
It was there before, was it not?
I thought maybe.
The only ones that I know of are at the camp, right?
Right.
Let me make a note to check that. If it works, I'll put it at that location.
Yeah, those ones in particular, I don't want to get into the mapping at this point, but I'm just thinking of the ones that are on the right-hand side of the camp road. You go in up there, Mark, right? The ones on the left-hand side seem to be on the wrong side of the road in the mapping. They seem to be more where the works is for the dredge, rather than on the other side, which I think you've got it labeled as commercial.
That's where the lagoons are, on the right-hand side.
As you go in road on the right-hand side.
Yeah,
that's what it was.
Yeah.
Ready for that, yeah.
Yeah, 4.02 zone standards for a rural. I like the measurements we had in there presently. I don't see a need to go from, I guess it was a minimum lot frontage is 60, and in your proposal, John, is the 100.
That's where I think the confusion came. Maybe John thought, I don't know, he's going to explain here what his thinking was, but I know Whitestone's was that, and it looks like we went with Whitestone. But
yeah,
this is
so the only thing that I really think we need to change there is the area, 3.8, which is B.
Change it to 0.8, from 8 to 0.8 to 2?
Yeah, so just leave it at 0.8.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the, I believe the frontage, just as Councillor Hoskin said, should be the 60 that we currently have.
Yeah. So the only thing on that table would be left is 0.8. Everything else would stay the same.
We wondered about K as well, because accessory building height, we seem to be going reverse there. And yet buildings are getting taller. We've gone from 6 down to 5. So would that stay 6 then?
Yeah. I would leave that at 6.
I'm looking at the table and I'm thinking that everything that was previously there should remain the same, because if you're not increasing the maximum lot area, then it makes it very difficult to increase the side exterior side yard, interior side yard, or sorry, the exterior side yard, rear yard, if you're still having the 0.8 compared to the 2 hectare. So the, probably the only thing that would be changing would be I, maximum building height from 10 meters to 12 meters.
Well, and K on the next page actually is a decrease from 6
and
to 5 meters.
Yes, and that one.
Yeah,
we're back to the
original
6. That's two points.
And is that the new number that Chris has recommended going forward?
The height or the...
Yeah, because we want to increase the height, did we not, in our, this...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
To some measurement that probably the last rezoning application was for a higher garage. So did Chris must have a number, I sort of thought.
Yeah, I think I have that note somewhere.
Okay.
Still dealing with the rural, I just guess it sort of ties in with the chart that you put together as well. If I can find that.
That was in some of the cover notes.
I think you'd explain that some of them no longer relevant. What I had done originally was I went through all of the exceptions and all the different zones, as you recall, and what I forwarded to you, and then put them under what you were suggesting. So some of the special provisions actually had many uses, for example, not the rural necessarily, but so similar to a C2, that the special provision disappeared and it became a C2. So we'll just do the rural to start with, but I just want to make sure that they're all covered. I've found some that seem to be missing, and I'm just wanting to get your take on it. I don't want to put you on the spot. I don't remember each one.
Well, no, if you have one that you want me to check, I will check. And if there's a hint of possible deficiency in terms of what the landowner received as an entitlement, I'll put it back.
Yeah.
To create no no confusion, objection, et cetera.
I had noted 16.4.1 in the original. It was actually a special provision, and now it's all verb. I think it was down along 124 of the McEwen property.
So I'll reject that and I'll put it in as an exception if it's, let's just say, if it has a hint of any kind of.
Just to have a look to see, right. Because if I recall those in particular, it was for a particular reason, and if it's going to be just a rural, it's a lot of uses, so we just have to see.
Yeah, I'll check
it. Okay. And the other one, I think I know the answer to this one, but maybe just recall 1646. I think that was the night, yes, Gavin and Granny Flat, and that was years and years ago, so I don't know whether that's, I'm just looking here.
It's
still an exception, okay. I guess. No, it's just gone rural now.
It's just gone rural. Is it still being used?
I don't know.
Because those suites tended to have an expiry date.
Right, they did. Recall. That was way back. Another one I noticed was 1660, 16.60. Again, that was a guest, I think, let me see here, the garden suite. Mm-hmm. And now it's all rural.
Again, I'll check that.
Sure, 16.63. It seemed, I have a note here that there were two of the same number, but I don't think they show up in your chart that way. Yeah, there's two 16.63s in our zoning now. And I just want to make sure that one wasn't forgotten about, because I think your chart just shows one.
I'd like to check that.
So just a question about the garden suite, as you mentioned, as special provision 1660. And then it goes to rural use designation. So then you sort of lose track, or how does that, then that becomes that garden suite becomes an allowable use on that property from this day forward, like the day forward that this gets enacted, or?
Well, it depends on the wording in the bylaw that put it there. If the bylaw that put it there has an attached agreement saying it must be removed in year 2017, then the rule works. If it has no expiry date, we would put it back in as an exception. But I don't know how McKellar handled their garden suites. Did they tend to put a finite period on their allowance?
Well, the wording in the talked about 3 years for one of them. So there was a finite, but I'm not sure anything was done after that 3 years.
So when it goes to rural, it becomes unlawful. Now, I might have to make a phone call to the owner and say, what's going on? But the idea of a garden suite, in theory, was that they be removed at a certain date. But we know practically, if someone built a second house, it going to be hard for,
right,
you know, it to go away. So it'll just depend on my research. I have all the bylaws. I just have to try and figure out what's on them now.
So technically then, because there is, you know, housing shortage, now can it be applicable that the second dwelling is allowed on that property as long as it's not within the waterfront designation and that it has the servicing required to that?
Yes, so that's council's decision. Based on what I find out is the entitlement now.
Because I think that's fair, you know, if it's allowable province-wide.
I don't think anybody wants to take sound housing out of the market, for sure.
Okay, anything else on the rural?
I think we want to go back to the way we've always used it, so those changes shouldn't take place.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, especially L, because I think in L, in the chart, it was the table that was actually quoting a resolution from Whitestone there. So.
What page are you on?
48.
It seemed like the 10, going down to 10% could be pretty restrictive. So that's only about 3,000 square feet combination total lot coverage. So yeah, remaining at the 15% in L is good. And then, yeah, I guess back to where we were with all of that, then the lot depth that would stay at the 45. Side yard, rear yard, the 7.5.
So the whole chart stays.
Yeah, the whole chart.
As nice as it was at 9.5.
Yeah.
Now, just an update. Maybe Carly has the number here for back on Charles, I think, LeBlanc. Was that given a number? 1674, was that an RR? That's not an exception, or is it? I can't remember.
It was a special provision.
It was a special provision?
Yeah.
That's something John wouldn't be privy to necessarily, but.
Was that a recent one?
I think it's more recent.
But I think, Carly, you gave me that.
Yes, those are right. And then there'll be a 16.77 for EDC to add.
But that's waterfront.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, so looking at the chart.
So on to RM. I'm just wondering on your, I know it's residential multiple, and yet when we do an acronym like that, it's multiple residential. So I'm just wondering, I'll ask the planner this. we're not doing them in the same order. Does that get confusing, or?
It sort of seems to have been convention since bylaws were built back in the 60s.
Yeah.
It does seem dumb, doesn't it?
So that chart didn't change anyway, right?
No. They're only going to happen in the village very rarely, I would think.
Yeah. Speaking of which, though, since that refers again to the mapping, I know we'll get to, but I noticed the one on McKellar Lake, it's now WF2 for the multiple residential. I think it's the exception that's in here. And yet all around it is WF1. I'm just wondering why it went to a 2 on that particular lot.
It's still an exception, is it?
Well, that's... I don't see it here.
WSCSWF22.
Oh, that's water. Okay, that's why. Sorry, throwing you off. No. So on to waterfront then, 52.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the one thing before we get into the chart, residential uses, there were three or four different things mentioned in the OP of uses. Should they be listed there as well? They were mainly dealing with existing general commercial, tourist commercial, agricultural farming uses, excluding intensified public uses, institutional uses, existing industrial uses. This is all for waterfront, but it was in the official plan. So I'm just wondering if that's get carried over with the same uses?
Probably I wouldn't in a bylaw. I mean,
I noticed the others pretty well all complied. You looked at, and I know it's fairly general in the official plan and the more specific in the bylaw.
Yes, so I think we have general provisions to look after things like existing agricultural operations are allowed, but I'm not sure I would list them as a permitted use of first instance in the zoning. So if they have an existing operation, maybe someone has horses that go down to the lake.
Right.
Horses like to swim. I don't know if you've noticed that, but can be rather intimidating when you're boating along, because somewhat like Loch Ness comes up alongside your
boat. No, that's fine. I understand your reasoning. I'm just wondering why it was omitted there. But
yeah, so again, we inserted the changes, but we're going to leave them the way they were on the chart?
Yes.
We thought it might have been a bit of a concern if it suddenly went waterfront one and went from 60 to 90 meters.
Yes. Yeah, no, it's not going to happen.
Okay. And the exceptions on 53, I've got 16.24. Says two here, yeah, that's.
It should be one, right?
Right.
Do you have any issues with it going to waterfront one?
No, I just say we have the reasoning behind it, because we have a number here when they come up with the commercial, and so just wanted to hear the, because there were concerns, I guess, from at least one source when it was just pretty well done with a number of special provisions becoming just a zone.
Right.
I don't know on this particular one whether there's any concern. How does it give extra uses than what was intended? Or?
I can check it out.
I also had 16.34.
mean it's not on the water?
Well, I'm not really sure. Maybe Councilor Haskin knows. It's down in that broadband area, so.
Which one is that?
1634. I think it was an extra guest cabin, too.
Like the second one?
Right.
Yeah, I think it's
is it gone?
Still, well, he had to reduce the size of it at one time, and council made him, he actually did chop a big chunk off the sleeping cabin to become legal, because I guess it exceeded the present, what was allowed in square footage. So that sleeping cabin will probably always be there, legal as far as I'm aware.
So it might be one that needs to have exception, if it's a second cabin.
No, it's just one.
Oh, so
sleeping
it,
cabin.
So it should be fine.
Yeah, it should be fine. It's still there. And
is it waterfront then?
It's
on the river.
Yeah, it's on the river.
Okay, so that's okay.
That's 1665. I'm not sure if it's even on our.
No, it's not on there.
Is that a new one? That's the McCabe one.
Didn't that go to OLT?
Yeah, and I'm just, something I read on it anyway, that it has limited uses, what it can be used for, parking area and various other things, but it seemed to me that it went to a larger use somewhere that I read.
But it should be an exception, so
right.
I'll put that together.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think it went to, I'm looking at waterfront too. Councilor Craig?
So I think the special provision 16.34, Councilor Haskin, because a piece of property was severed off of that original piece of property?
I think that's how it came about.
Yeah.
Yeah, to allow the severance. They found that the sleeping cabin didn't conform.
Yeah, so that's that special provision no longer is attached to that original piece of property.
That's right.
And I have 16.70. I don't know if it is the grant one that's on there. It looks like it's an exception already, but I'm just wondering here.
It's number 18.
Yeah, I had to start up just in time to figure out why I did, but oh, I guess it's listed as waterfront to 18
right.
On your chart,
right.
But does that conform with like the waterfront 218, 120 meters, 1 hectare? I'm not sure if it's the same piece of property we're talking about. It just doesn't look like the grant one.
I can check that pretty easily. It's fairly recent.
And 1672. I think it's Reed. There's something. I'm not sure if it's in our book on 19, is it? I don't think it's listed as an exception.
No, it should be.
Yeah.
16, yeah.
16.7.2 was was recently down on Island View.
Oh, you're right.
The Solway one, noticed in the chart, but again, it's not in the actual exception list.
It's missing in action.
WF221 would be LeBlanc, and WF222 would be EDC. So they're in the chart, but they're just not in the...
They're not in the text.
I had 1639. That was LeBlanc and Charles as well. That's gone to Waterfront 2. There seemed to be exceptions at one point. I have a cross reference, but.
Check it by law.
Yeah, because 39 seem to have some restrictions here on frontage and different parts of it. And then it just went straight to Waterfront 2. So, and they're probably all legal non-conforming in that area. It's gone to Waterfront 3, but it had restrictions at one point. Now, I know in each case, you even had in the restrictions, the wording was that you meet the requirements of the WO3 zone, so maybe there's nothing there that would be WR3 anyways.
I'll check.
Yeah.
And again, my principle will be if there's any kind of dangling restriction for or against,
right.
I'll make sure it gets added back.
Okay.
I mean, the goal here is to not upset any apple cart.
That's all I have.